Rio, special, what you look for in a yearling today. Andrew Grierson joins.
Do everything right to bring the horse here, and obviously we've got great staff and got a reputation for having horses which are tractable, which is part of our winning process, which both Tony and Kelly and the rest of the staff do fantastically well, because they're really good horse people, and horsemanship is what it's about when you're talking about weaning, and that goes all the way through to how horses behave right through to yearling sale, as to how well they've been done at that stage in their life. And so that's that. And then we have other processes in place for our weanlings and yearlings. We have Dunstan involved, looking at the good and the bad horses, and you know how they're coming through and trying to maximise and even their growth and do all of that. And then we have the blacksmith, and we have right from the time the foals are born, after week one, we start looking at where their legs are going and doing whatever we can in the way of trimming, and sometimes putting bog on their feet to make sure that they're as correct as possible and try and reduce the wastage. So it's a big process.
It's a big team effort, and we're going to get on to what you look for in a yearling, but it's probably the one thing that's impressed me the most and biggest eye-opener, I reckon, as well, from my point of view, is it is a team effort. There's no dead-set shit kicker, if you like the person's just walked around picking up poo. It's from top to bottom, isn't it? Everyone's all hands on deck, including yourself. I mean, you don't get out there and walk the yearlings, but you're always there that if someone needs assistance or guidance or whatever, you're there to give. Even yesterday watching the weanling parade. That's one thing about Woodlands, and it's not a small team. I don't know how many staff you've got. I took a video last night, and it was predominantly staff. There's a lot of heads.
Yeah, look, we've got extra staff, obviously, when we're selling 65-odd today, and we don't have that number of staff permanently on board to be able to do the job right. So we've got people who call us up and said, oh, can we join your team? And that's part of the culture of the staff. It's, you try and control it, but as a boss, you can't. It's the people who interact with each other. And, you know, I've got some really, really good permanent staff who make those people who come in for the day feel really, really accepted and positive about it and want to work. You know, the trick is to make them work with you, not for you. And I think that's what we've tried to do. And, yeah.
It must be rewarding that you have staff ring and say they want to come and work for you, because, I mean, yeah, I'm sure staff need work and all the rest, but it must still be a little bit rewarding that they're prepared to ring you and say, we want to be a part of the team.
Yeah, especially for the sales, because it's a bit of a buzz for those people. I mean, there's no question that the whole industry is struggling to get permanent staff of quality, and we're no different. It's an indictment of the whole horse industry overall that I suppose when I graduated as a veterinarian some 40 plus years ago, it was the one industry to be in, and that was the wow industry. But now, you know, it's not, and that sort of goes all the way down the levels, not only veterinarians, but you know, it's hard to get the right people in the industry. And yeah, I think it's the same in Australia as it is in New Zealand.
Yeah, it's across the board, and it's something that's got to be looked at and addressed. And I know there's people that are doing it, but it is definitely something that has to. So what you look for in a yearling, I've started this with the Nutrien sale just recently, and I got a lot of good feedback about it, because people look at a catalogue very differently. I think people pick up a catalogue and they're not sure how to address it if you're coming into the sport. Catalogues and pedigrees can be very tricky to read for a lot of people. We're going to go onto the stallions with you at part of it, but as a person that looks at a catalogue, what are the key components that you actually look at for potentially buying a weanling or a yearling outside of your own barn? What are some of the key things that you actually look for first?
I mean, you know, obviously, a good up-to-date pedigree is really important, and how well, say, the dam has done if she's got a few foals on the ground is really important. And you know, provided she's gone to a sire which is not going to hold her back, you know, it's a general rule when you're looking at what a mare's doing, if she hasn't produced something in the first three foals from good sires, then you know she may end up producing something, but she's not perhaps going to be a wow mare as far as a brood mare goes. So there's that of it. How you select the horses themselves? Well, there's two parts. I mean, obviously the pedigree's one half, and then for me the second half of the horse, the individual, goes into two parts, because I'm a veterinarian. Then it's the veterinary side of it. What's going on? You know, as far as the things I look for, and then probably the last thing, because I race and evolve with horses so much, is, you know, what the individual's like. Is it an athletic type? Has it got the right shoulder angle, the right bum? Is it nice and even? Has it got a good nature about it, and all those things, which also manifest into being a good racehorse. So then you look at, from the veterinary point of view, the conformation, you know, good feet, even legs, and I vet a lot of horses for thoroughbreds, and have historically all my career, and what you're looking for in a thoroughbred versus what you're looking for in a standardbred are quite different, but in regards to the fact that the front end of a standardbred is a lot more forgiving than what you see in a thoroughbred, because in a thoroughbred, if you're pushing out at a knee, or you just don't look at it, whereas a standardbred, that you can forgive that, provided he ticks a lot of other, or she ticks a lot of other boxes.
Do you put a little bit more emphasis on the hind end, like you say, with a standard, or you just hope for the whole package is okay?
Yeah, look, I evaluate the legs overall, and yes, it's something that, you know, if I see something I just don't like because it's, you know, that it's got a hock that is just not right, or whatever, or it's really, really bad conformation in the front end. I struggle to work out whether a horse is going to go on a knee or not. You know, I mean, guys trot it up and say, well, that's going on a knee. And, you know, classic example, there's one very successful sire down here that every time you look at them, you think, oh, that's going to go on a knee. But as they go into work, they seem to get further and further away from their knee when they're working. So I can't quite get my hand around that, but the rest of it.
That's interesting. Yeah. You give me about three. Like, this is a worry with these podcasts. Yeah. They can go for a little while. So as a veterinarian, you can watch a horse walk or trot up in front of you, but you won't guarantee that that's going to go a knee or a knot.
Well, for me, it's not. I mean, some people probably say, well, I can pick that like a shot. So, you know, that's just me.
But the people that tell you they can pick it like a shot, are they accurate?
Look, I guess so. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. So you got three categories there. You've got your pedigree, you've got your veterinary component, and then the type. Which one's the most important for you when you start saying, right, we're going to go to sales and we're going to purchase two or three yearling, you know, so fillies just for your breeding barn. We'll get to the colts in a sec. Is it type? Like, which one goes first?
Type for me. Yeah, that's, I mean, if it's a beautifully bred horse and it's a spastic, it's going to be a spastic. and so for me, a horse that looks like an athletic type is how I've always measured that in the past.
That's your first thing, and then your pedigree.
Yeah, and then, yeah, pedigree, and yeah.
And go from there.
I mean, there's some, you know, for instance, going to the sire situation, some sires, when you look at their performance, if, you know, 70% of their colts, if they're a certain type, or 90% of they're a special type, they're going to be runners and they're going to win races. And so, you know, clearly I would probably put a lot of emphasis on the sire, because, you know, good sires pull dams out of the page, don't they, and improve their pedigree.
Yeah, well, they do, and as I said, I keep teasing that's one of the parts we go to. Do you, when you are purchasing one, do you set a price? Like, would you go to a sale and set a price and say, right, I'm not going to spend any more than $1,000 on this horse, and that's only a fictitious number, but do you set a price and say, I'm not going to go over that? Or if you see one and you say, right, that's the one I want, do you say, right, well, I'm going to take that horse home? Is that how?
Look, I think every horse has a value in your own mind. So you generally look to the value of that horse. And I personally wouldn't go overs on what I thought the value was. What that value was depends on all those factors, type yep. And pedigree, and also, you know, confirmation.
But when it gets around where you think it is, and if it's strong, you'll just happily walk away and go the next one?
Yes, I do. I mean, we've, you know, thankfully got some purchasers at the yearling sales who, if they end up having a go and someone else is having a go, they don't stop, which is great to see, but that's probably not me.
It's one of the unique things about New Zealand yearling sales, is you do have some very big players that don't like being outbidded, and they get into contests and they want to. So if you're on the Woodland Stud vendors side of things, it's awfully good if you're on the Woodland Stud trying to change your breed up and go from there. You guys,
but in truth, that you know, those some of those purchasers are actually Australian that come here, so they're
I think most of them are. But it's one of the unique things about the New Zealand sale, isn't
it? It is, yeah, like, and we have some very strong buyers as well, and you know, the Kennards and clearly come to mind, and John Street, and he doesn't like to get beaten, and then across the ditch you've got
Emilio Gene.
And so yeah, like it's if you were going to say anything about the buyers bench in the standardbreds compared to the thoroughbreds have probably, we've got half a dozen or more in that category, and the thoroughbreds have a couple of rows of those sort of people.
Woodland Stud, you guys have been a part of it, yourself and Charlie, who's no longer with you, but with us, about 30 years, is that what you said the other day?
Yeah, look, 1992, I think, so 29
coming up,
years.
Yeah, well, coming, yeah, up 30.
Coming up 30 years.
You must sit back at some stage and say, wow, like where it's come from to where it is today. And a lot of that would be hard work behind the scenes and a lot of forward planning. One of the key components, you've got some great maternal families that you sell constantly, and you're forever, you know, breeding, you know, champion racehorses, Group 1 racehorses. But the stallions that you've been able to bring to Australasia, you must really pinch yourselves a little bit at the mark you've left in harness racing, especially, you know, like as from the sire point of view.
Yeah, look, a lot of people don't realise how many sires we've had.
Yeah.
We've had, we've looked after sires for other people before we started to buy into our own sires. And I think the total number of stallions we've had in those 29 years is probably about the same number as the years, 29, 30, 30 stallions. And you know, most of failures, I would probably say that the ones we've purchased, with the work that we've done on selection, there's not many that have been duds compared to what we've stood over the years for other people.
So the process, and just for the record, you guys didn't own In the Pocket, but that was sort of the tipping point for you and Charlie, that once you saw what In the Pocket was able to do, is that true? I read or heard that somewhere.
Yeah, look, it's probably more than that, in that he was a successful sire and he was on a lease basis, and you never knew where you were with on a lease basis, because you had a deal, and then someone else would come in and say, hey, look, I can do better than that for half the price, and so you're always looking over your back, whereas and when you look at a stallion and you spend a lot of time proving that horse, and then you need, you know, that when he's got 4 and 5 year olds out and they're doing well, the last thing you need is for that horse to go west, and so that's pretty well what happened with In the Pocket. We're always getting chipped off with the owners as to the price and what the deal was for us, and then of course he subsequently got sold in the twilight of his career, and whereas we would have probably preferred to have looked after him and even after he'd retired, and just given him a good retirement till he died a ripe old age. And so after that experience, Charlie and myself sat down, and Charlie was adamant that we're not going through this again. He said to me, I'm too old to have this go on. He said, we need to buy our own horses and buy the best we can. So that's, with that in hand, that's why after we lost In the Pocket, I went to the States, and it was a long story, but how we got Better Salight was that Charlie said, oh, we've got this amount to spend. And he'd already had a talk to his mate, Harry Harvey, in America. And Harry said, oh, well, there's nothing really that's worthwhile up here. And I said that I had a couple of horses to look at, and one was Bettis Delight. And I'll go up and have a look myself and see what I could do. And then I did the deal on Bettis Delight and rang up Charlie and said, this is what's happening. And there's some money. And Boardroom and Blue Chip shook on the deal, came home. And then when we got home, it was an interesting story. And Charlie said, oh, not so sure. Harry says this Bettis Delight's had every chance, and he doesn't look like he's going to make it. And so I said, oh, well, I've shook on the deal, Charlie. You think about what we want to do, but I think we should carry on. And he said, okay. So in the end, we did the deal. And then a few weeks later, Blue Chip rang up and said, oh, would you like to take an extra 10% of the ownership rather than what we'd taken? So as a result, we ended up taking, we normally take 50, and we took another 10 on top of that, of the ownership of the horse, and rest is history. As the ink was drying, he ended up being the leading sire of 2 and 3 year olds, because, and then I remember having the conversation with Gene Brown over the phone one day, saying, oh, Gene, if you'd known what was going to happen, would you have done the deal? And she just laughed and said, oh, probably not for the same money. But I could tell you the money was pretty good for them.
Okay, there'll be a lot of people, like, he's famous here, and rightfully so, and I'll go on to parts with the sale part. So he was already standing at stud in North America, and they weren't producing, is that?
No, he was a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old of the year, and he was a super
as a racehorse,
super horse. He got the very best mares as a 2-year-old, and when his 2-year-old crop came out, he was 7th on the size list in 2-year-olds, I think, in his first crop. Everyone expected him to be right up there, and he wasn't. And then, so when I went up, it was just after that 2-year-old crop. So I came up in June, and you know, and so they were just breeding at the time for the next season. So that 2-year-old crop was now maturing as a 3-year-old crop. That 2-year-old crop ended out being the leading crop in America as 3-year-olds, and then the 2-year-old crop behind that ended up being the leading 2-year-old. So he was in North America with his oldest being 3, and he was the leading sire of 2 and 3-year-olds in his first season. And the other thing interesting about Bettis Delight is that we had some frozen semen down this part of the country in New Zealand, and everyone said in those days, oh, frozen semen doesn't work and it's not as good and all that sort of stuff. Well, I can tell you that in the case of Bettis Delight, he had, I think it was 22 foals out of the largest crop of frozen semen he had, and he ended up leaving Highview Tommy and Arden's Darling, who was the 2-year-old colt of the year and the 2-year-old filly of the year, out of those 22 foals. So I can tell you one thing, frozen semen works for him.
he breaks a lot of molds. So that was just absolutely perfect timing, and possibly no hesitation as well. When you go to select a horse like Bettis Delight, and yeah, we can bring this forward a little bit to today's times with Seaside, Sweet Lou, and the likes, What the Hill. When you go, like, as I say, you look at a catalogue, when you look at a stay-in, do you look at, like, you got race performance as well, but you've got race performance, their type, how their pedigree looks on a page, and then I would imagine from your point of view, you've got that veterinary part as well.
Yeah.
Do all those factors come into purchasing a horse, or is there one key component for you guys?
There's several key components, and they all have to marry up. One of the other ones you haven't mentioned, which is really important, is who owns the horse in North America? Who are the syndicate owners, or who are the people? Will that stallion get a fair crack of the best mares in America to be able to prove himself? Because if it's not owned and purchased, shares are purchased by major players up there, they're going to have an uphill battle. So I look at that as well. So, you know, if Hanover's bought into them, Blue Chip, Kentuckiana Farm, this, you know, Diamond Creek, there's Southwind, there's a whole lot of major players up there that you need to have a look at that and say, well, you know, these guys see what the horse has done. And, you know, and then other things of factors which you have to take into consideration. So a classic example is American Ideal. He's got about 900,000 on his card or whatever it is, and you know, he's not a millionaire. And but yeah, you know, here's a horse that as a 3-year-old he ended up being injured, and he'd won a whole lot of races, broken a whole lot of track records. Everyone's saying, wow, this is the next superstar. And then he ended up having a fracture of one of his major long bones, a hairline fracture, which was shown on scintigraphy. Got syndicated for a whole lot of money, went to be put back into work, and was going great as a 4-year-old. And they went to reinsure him, and the insurance company said, oh, well, hold on, this is a pre-existing condition. If he breaks down with this, you've got no insurance. So all the studs turned around and said, well, we own the horse now. We're going to put him straight to stud. People say, oh, he wasn't a good racehorse. Well, in actual fact, if you look at his race record, it was superb. He just never got a chance after they pulled him out. And he was sound at the time when he retired, but they just couldn't get the insurance on him.
They couldn't insure him.
Yeah, so those are things which, you know, you've got to put into perspective, because it doesn't mean just because he didn't have the money that you expected, there was a damn good reason why he didn't. And it wasn't the fact that he was unsound. He'd had this freak sort of injury. And
So what is your key component when you look for a stay in, say, American Ideal, or even, say, a lather up? What is the key components that you go looking for prior? Because I would imagine you don't just say, ring up someone and say, oh, what stallions are for sale? I would imagine there's a lot more gets done. Like, do you look at their race record first and foremost, or their breeding and race record?
Performance is really important. I mean, like, if you look at our last two acquisitions, What the Hill was a 3-year-old trotting colt of the year. And if you look at his 2-year-old performance, he lost a really important race.
On Protest.
And he would have been the 2-year-old of the year as well if he'd won that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and so he's a super racehorse, and the best trotting racehorse that trotter to ever come down the flesh here, without a doubt. And then just on his juvenile performance. And then when you look at Down by the Seaside, he's a horse that he was 3-year-old trotting, pacing colt of the year in America at the same time. And he carried on. So Huntsville fell, it was a beautiful horse, and he fell to the side because he got injury, and whereas Down by the Seaside retired completely sound and just would have kept on going, you know.
Yeah.
So do you
follow trends? Because the two horses you just said then, like Seaside and Huntsville, and even we can throw Treacherous in, all being sons of Sunbeat Somewhere. And he's a very funny horse, Sunbeat Somewhere, because the knockers were out, especially in Australia, big time on them, because, I mean, he stood for a nice service fee, and there was enough knockers out there saying they're not doing enough, these horses, and they're a bit roguish and the likes. But then all of a sudden, like this year at the sales especially, those three stallions have been very, very well sought after.
Yeah.
Do you follow a trend?
Yeah, look, the trend is that out of all the sire lines at the moment, Mac 3 is a sire of sires.
Yeah.
So he's sired Sun Beach, and Sun Beach has sired Captain Treacherous. And so when you're looking at any of the sire lines, probably that's the most dominant commercial sire line at the moment. And part of our interest in a Sun Beach Sun, and the best we could get, was the fact that that's one of the golden crosses for Bettison Light Mares. And so where we're looking, that whoever can work out what's going to click with Bettison Light Mares has probably got a damn good lead up to being the next successful sire in the country.
Because there is so many of them.
Well, not only that, but there's so many good race mares out of that. And you're looking at it now in Australia, and, you know, the last awards dinner of on the weekend, Bettison Light was the sire of 3-year-olds in Australia. So he's, you know, there's, what do they say with successful sires? It's the night after the day, and so he's going to carry on as a successful broodmare sire. There's no question of that.
An older horseman told me years ago that a stay-in froze a type, if you like, and stamps his horses and the likes. And a lot of horses, the two were saying there before, Huntsville, Seaside, you can nearly pick them at the sales. Similar builds, similar types of horses. The Huntsvilles were dark, they were brown to black, and Seasides were brown to black bay. That was about the only difference, but you can nearly pick them on type. Betters, he dispels all those theories. I mean, you know, I hear all these people say, oh, his small ones are his best ones. I had a horse called Arden Rooney. And then they turned around and said, oh, they've got to have big chests and big bums. Runes used to bash a knee, like, and he was, you know, he was one of his best ones. But as a person that purchases a horse like Betters, and then you start seeing the foals, and I've got no doubt you would have seen a couple of midgets and you would have been going, oh my, what have we done here? And was that ever a worry with you early on with him?
Yeah, look, I probably, if you're going to say the one thing right at the start of his career of selling yearlings and was he had some small types and had some horses which weren't what trainers were wanting to buy, but they invariably, a lot of them proved them wrong.
Yeah,
and they went out and did it. I think the one thing you could take home about Betters Elite is that there are no rules with him. He just his percentages are unbelievable. His longevity in his racehorses is incredible, and yeah, it's hard to judge that as a norm for a stallion because he breaks all the rules.
The one stamp I think he does, Kind Horse. He leaves a Kind Horse. Colt, filly, gelding, they all personable, have a little bit of character about them, and they're kind. But other than that, you can't pick a type. You wouldn't be able to pick one walking past you. You could have a guess, but you're not always, you're not always going to be right. So you get a horse like Betters, and he's a breeding revelation. Like he's changed the demographic in Australia and New Zealand the way, and I'm tipping back to North America as well. And then you then accumulate mares and fillies yourself because you've been able to breed them and continue on. Back to our stud book, you look at your stud or your catalogue, your yearling catalogue, and what you want to pick and what you want to how you want to say, you know, showcase these horses. Purchasing the stay-ins after that might click back to Betters Delight horses, and that does that influence you that you're not always necessarily going to go for necessarily the best horse in North America that might be up for, but the best one that might cross back with your mares, or do you still go back and say, no, we want the best?
Oh, look, we'd always look for the best. I mean, in the case of Sweet Lou, he was an unbelievable two-year-old. He's a good, strong horse, and he had longevity, went through to five. Not a lot of people would say the most fashionable sire line, but his female line is the hottest property in America. It's probably the best female line in the States at the moment. So he has got great breeding, and, you know, classic example, you know, Captain Crunch is out of that family, and so it's a fantastic female line, and he had longevity. The other side of the coin is, I suppose, being a bit Irish, his best, and I'm not Irish, that
you've had a lot to do there with him, though.
but is that, you know, his Betters, at one stage his most performed son, albeit a gelding, was a better slight half to Sweet Lou. So that's our thought was, well, if obviously that clicks, and it looks like it's we're right too, it has clicked. So
the other interesting part about Sweet Lou is the fact that he's got Sealster back in that family with the Kiwis, and the Australians love Sealster in their families anyway, and there's a couple in his sale today. I know that are out of, they've got Sealster on both sides of them too. So
yeah, it's a good broodmare size.
Falcon
Sealster, no question.
And they're very hard to get hold of. I don't want to hold you because there are a lot of people getting around it and the likes, and I appreciate your time and I appreciate the hospitality that you've shown me. But going forward, what are the plans like to keep improving the breed? I would love to say probably, you know, being one of the top studs in Australasia, but I think you're already at that part. But do you want to keep continually improving harness racing and the breed of harness racing? Is that one of the goals of Woodlands, or is there going to be a stage where you're going to back off a bit? Or
I mean, we'll continue to try and do as, you know, we have a few obstacles with, you know, a bit of conniving and scheming in the background that makes it very difficult for a stud owner to go forward and buy the best. And
Yeah.
That's probably for another discussion,
but yep.
You clearly understand where I'm coming from and with recent announcements. But yeah, we've got a passion for it. I love horses. I love they're part of what I do, and that will continue. So, and we just try and use our brains and buy the very best that we can afford to buy, and try and do the best we can with them and give them every chance. And so that won't change. We're not going away. And Charlie passing, everyone says, oh, what's happening there? We were 50-50 in the business, and Charlie's daughter Mary and her husband Paul have shown as much interest as Charlie has in the whole game, and so it'll continue.
Yeah, they haven't just got the interest, they've got the love, because they were here yesterday, and you can just see they just love. They may not be as hands-on as what you are, but they certainly have a very big love of the industry and the Woodlands brand. And I think, the one thing, and I'm just looking here, at Wingland's been inspected over the side, and you're big on your brand. I love that part. I love the branding. I think anyone still listening to this want to get over here to Karaka. I've said it ad nauseum, but seriously should get over here and look at the branding. The way you guys brand, you're so passionate about Woodlands, and that shows. And I think that then shows on your breeding, then onto the racetrack and what you're able to achieve. And then with the size and taking out, like you said, with Better to Light, taking out the awards, and it won't be the last award he takes out. And I'm sure, the Sweet Lou's, the Seasides, What the Hills, they're going to continue that on. So, Andrew, I really appreciate it. And for people who aren't aware, you are a vet. You've been a vet for as long as you've been anything else. So it is quite a unique. You're not just a successful stud man who, has a passion for harness racing. You have a veterinary background, and you've been able to instill a lot of that. And I think that actually has helped improve the breed here in New Zealand, and definitely in Australia as well.
Yeah, no, thanks, Paul, for that. It's a really important part of what I do is a stud, and I do have a passion for it, and appreciate the time to talk to you about it.
I've loved it. I could talk to him for ages. Everyone wants to know. I'm hoping to come back. We'll do a couple more of these when we get back, and cover off on a few things. And we're not going to get political today, but Andrew, thank you very much for your time, and I will let you go because there's all hands on deck there looking at these Wienlands. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Cheers.